heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Well, I think you might agree with me. There are not too many things today that have bipartisan support. So when a political debate or argument comes to the front, that certainly has a lot of people coming together on both sides of the aisle, many times for different reasons, of course. You know that already. Then you have to sort of begin to question and say, what are we really talking about here? And that really is the quandary, people, as you've been seeing over the last few days here. Let's title this one, Can America Get Out of Endless Wars? Now, again, I was just saying to the group here we have on here today, that's a question I probably asked myself when I was 8 or 9 years old. And we're still asking that question today because, again, a lot of people phrase this a little differently. Some call it police in the world. Others call it nation building. Others call it national security. Whatever you want to call it, it is a position that America has been in for a very long time in keeping the peace in the world. A lot of Americans have grown, they've grown tired of that that headline, that rhetoric. Others recognize the importance of it. So that, in essence, is where the divide is, people. So President Trump says, and this was, it blindsided most all of us and the media, but certainly the officials in the Pentagon and in the military knew this was coming because he had met with everybody prior. So let's get that out there first. This wasn't just a wake up in the morning and let me see if I can ruffle the feathers, although one does question that sometimes when you're talking Donald Trump now, don't you? Huh? But the president's tweet again says this: I was elected on getting out of these ridiculous endless wars where our great military functions as a policing operation to the benefit of people who don't even like the USA. Now, that part of the tweet in itself is very interesting when you think about that. And the policing operation, which is what I said to you up front, that is part of the argument, of course, is policing the world. And there is something about that when you're talking, what's the role of the military or the peacekeepers? Is it to, you know, it's a question. I mean, are we policing or are we fighting a war? And I guess the president now has come under the idea that if we're going to fight a war, let's fight a war. Let's win it. And I think that's what you'd find. I think as a commander in chief of the military, my guess is I think he would go all out to win a war probably. You know what I'm talking about. There are certain presidents and generals who will do that. Others not so much. To finish that tweet, he says, the two most unhappy countries at this move are Russia and China because they love seeing us bogged down. You know, okay, now, interesting here because he's pointing out, now a lot of people would argue with that, with Russia and China. That's an arguable point, by the way, as you probably know. He's pointing out that they probably love this because he says, we're getting bogged down watching over a quagmire and spending big dollars to do so. When I took over, our military was totally depleted. Now it is stronger than ever before. The endless and ridiculous wars are ending, all capital letters there, people, with an exclamation mark. We will be focused on the big picture, knowing we can always go back and blast. And he says blast in capital letters with an exclamation mark. Now, again, that is foreign policy by tweets, but it is quite something. If you think about that, it's two tweets, by the way, so you get two for the price of one there. But he puts it right out there, and you can read in between that. There's a lot said in those two tweets, people, when it comes to foreign policy and the position of America. And that does change things a little bit here. Now, as far as the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria, there are a lot of polls and surveys being done. One of them is from Pew Research, says that 58% of Americans believe it's the right decision. 30% believe it's the wrong decision. I think by far and large, Americans are tired of war, and they're tired of everything that Trump puts in that those tweets there right there as well, spending our treasure, and more than that, our blood. I mean, I think that's really hits the soul of America here. So that's where we start today, people. And there is bipartisan outrage. I say outrage because people are just flying off of the cuckoo's nest here. And some of the unlikely people are joining together to say he's out of his mind. But then again, that's another day in the Oval Office with a president that is not afraid to stir the soup just a little bit, people. So we have a big conversation here we're going to have today here. And joining us on the call here, we'll have in the next hour here, Alana Friedman, Colonel Jim Warshak, Dennis Santiago, Del Wilbur. So we've got, I think, a really interesting conversation coming. And not everybody's on the same page here, for sure. So I want to start here with Alana Friedman. And so let me tell you about Alana and bring her on here. Alana is a veteran intelligence analyst, a political commentator, host here at America Out Loud. In fact, one of her recent books here, Hamas, Care, and the Muslim Brotherhood, The Plot to Destroy America, certainly fits into this narrative for sure. And that book is on Amazon, by the way, or the America Out Loud bookstore, which you'll find all kinds of interesting books and to check out there. Okay, so Alana, you have an article up there which is pretty bold and pretty straightforward in your opinions, never one to hold back from an opinion, which is why we like to have your opinions. You say, another deep betrayal, America abandons the Kurds again. And again, all this conversation today we're going to have with you and the articles we'll reference people are always back at AmericaOutLoud.com. You'll find them all today right at the tip top of the platform here. So, Alana, you say in here, while Turkey considers the Kurdish forces to be a terrorist organization, now let's remember that, number one, and that is a fact, and has for a long time been trying to get America to end its support for the group, the Kurdish fighters, which are part of the Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, have been the United States' most reliable partner in fighting the Islamic State in a strategic corner of northern Syria. To abandon them now is not only shameful, it is strategically imprudent. Alana, tell us about that quote, please, in the article.
Well, one of the things that you've mentioned already has been the endless wars that Trump talked about. This isn't one of them. We went into Syria with the help of the Kurds. We pretty much wiped out the operational headquarters of ISIS.
You're talking about the caliphate, right, Alana, the caliphate?
I'm talking about the caliphate, which had set up its operational headquarters in the city of Raqqa, which is the sixth largest city in Syria. Right. And these operations were very successful as far as they went. And this was a success story, unlike Afghanistan and Iraq, which truly are endless wars. And I think they're where the president should be paying attention as far as this particular, his motivation to end endless wars is the right one. But this isn't one of the endless wars. We have been in Syria for less than 3 years, and we have been successful there. He has.
Alana, let me ask you something. When we went to Syria initially, as I recall, and I don't remember the exact time frame, but weren't we supposed to just go for weeks or months, a very, very short time, right? Is that correct?
It was supposed to be that, but ISIS fighters were pretty well built in, and yeah. They're very sneaky, and they fight guerrilla wars. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't an easy battle, but we were successful. And if we get out of Syria now, they will come back. Count on it.
Right, right. So the question right there. Will they come back? And then again now, but Turkey now is going after the Kurds, yeah? I mean, they're going right in there now as we
Turkey
speak.
Is there. Yeah, Turkey wants to set up a 20-mile, what they call a safe zone.
That's right.
And they want to put 20 million Syrian refugees there. But in order to do that, they have to get the Kurds out because the Kurds actually live there and have for some time.
Okay.
So, I mean, the Kurds are an old people. So this is our job there would be more peacekeeping than it would be fighting a war.
Which is what Trump is against is policing, or as you say, peacekeeping, which is policing, really. That's what he's against, he's saying, Alana. What he's saying is our military is to fight a war, kick their ass, get in, get out, do our thing. That's what he's saying, isn't he?
Saying that, but you can't do that with ISIS. Because right. when you're dealing with terrorists, they don't come out and fight in uniform lines with in uniform. Okay. They blend in with the scenery, and they're very hard to identify. And when they come out, they strike with enormous ferocity. And that's something that right. needs
Which we've
to
seen.
Be checked, and it needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
We are leaving our allies behind, and we're essentially leaving them.
Got it. Yeah, that's the concern. And you say that really, really well in your article. I mean, you put a lot of heart and soul into your writing there, and people can read that on the platform right now. Let's bring on now Del Wilber. And let me tell you about Del here as well. He is a former CIA and Department of Defense Intelligence and Counterterrorism officer with a focus on technical and human intelligence collection activities. You know, Dale, Syria is one of the saddest stories, how that country has been obliterated. I mean, I have friends that are Syrian friends, really terrific people, who you just want to cry with them when you see what's been done to their homeland. I mean, the white helmets and everything that's happened out there in Syria, it's a disaster what's taken place in Syria. That country is, I mean, I don't know that it'll ever be right again. So let's talk now about this strategy here overall with the president's tweet. You hear Alana's comments and opening up. And this is a conversation that has really divided this country. Where do you fall on it, Dell?
Well, typical of the agency, I'm kind of wavering between the two sides here. So, the emotional part of me recognizes what the Kurds have been through in recent history, I'm talking the last 25, 30 years, and in understanding the fact that they have been valuable allies in that part of the world. But I also understand, too, the fact that we have, these quote-unquote endless wars. We've been fighting in some part of the world, probably since World War II, but but the last 20 years we've been mired in the Middle East. And so I can understand the president's decision militarily, and I'm sure Jim can talk to this much better than I can, but militarily, we're not talking about a huge amount of troops that are being withdrawn. And in my mind, if we maintain a capability to respond quickly to any type of emergency situation and that, then the fact that the number of troops is relatively small that's being pulled out anyway, I don't know that how much of a difference it's going to make. But I do hope that we keep in mind the Kurdish allies that we've had, and I'm certain that they, are probably questioning the wisdom of their choice to align themselves with the United States. And, that's something we can't, continually, disappoint our people that have chosen to side with us. That makes it difficult for us in the future.
Yeah, that is a really, really good point you bring up. Does this violate trust? Dell, is even a bigger question with other allies that are watching this, that are going to question whether America has their back or not. I think a lot of people, the argument on this story today is the our lack of not being there for the Kurds and turning our back, America's back on them when they have supported the initiatives that, as Alana said, have been at the core of defeating that caliphate out there. That's your concern as well, yeah?
Yeah, and I hearken back to, and I've mentioned this before on the show, and that, I still remember George Bush standing on a pile of rubble in New York City and telling us way back then that, we're involved in a war unlike any other we've ever fought, and it's going to last a long time. And we have to recognize that we are up against the type of evil and enemy in this world that has never been faced before. And it's resilient, and we're going to have to be resilient as well.
Yeah, that's it, Dale. You can cut the head of the snake off, Dale, but it grows back every time. And quite frankly, it grows back with multiple heads and multiple continents is what we're seeing. This is the ultimate fight of good versus evil. I talk about every day on this platform, Dale, every damn day I talk about this fight of good and evil. And this is the core of it right here, which is why I find it so interesting and always a fascinating discussion because it's just one that's it's polarized the world in such a way. And to be strategic about it. So again, maybe that's why Trump is not looking at this as a short-term situation, but a long-term strategy, Dell, that you point out. But I think the bigger thing is what do our other allies think, and are we really deserting the Kurds in such a way? Let me bring on here another voice now to the program here and invite on Dennis Santiago here. Dennis is an American strategist. He's a philosopher, a patriot. Focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Of course, this conversation, Dennis, goes to the core of global stability. Now, your article that I want people to read on the column is very interesting. It's called Foreign Policy. Trump's America is Not a Hegemonic Empire, and people should read that. It's on AmericaOutloud.com. And you say here, Trump is being very clear in what he is telling the world. He knows it is an earthquake that will shake the very foundations of U.S. foreign policy. Well, that's exactly what he did, and you hit it head on right there. He has shaken the foundation of this foreign policy because right now you have allies and you have enemies that are arguing with each other within their circles of influence about what we're discussing here today. So did Trump make the right move, you think, Dennis?
Yeah, I think he did, and here's why. You know, one, as ISIS wanes from the scene in Syria, what it really does is it opens up undone issues, and one of the undone issues there is Turkey has millions of Syrian refugees on their side of the border, and they want to get rid of them. They also have a long-running war with the Kurds. And, you know, and I know the Kurds are really good allies of the United States. They put a lot of faith in us, which I'm not really sure was a good idea for them. They were they've been told that it probably wasn't a really good idea by pretty much everybody on the planet. But they, you know, they really believe in us. But the fact of the matter is, in going forward, particularly in contact with Turkish troops, it doesn't matter that they have different factions of Kurdish fighters. The Turks see them all as PKK terrorists, and there's really not a lot that we can do to change that because Erdogan is he's kind of a piggish head when it comes to that kind of stuff. So here's the quandary that is raised by this: the Turks want to move into Syria. They want to create this buffer zone. They've said so for a very long time. We have troops in Syria. The problem for us strategically is we also have troops in Turkey. And we would wind up the United States in a position of having troops on both sides
right.
of a war that is an incursion by Turkey. And it risks our people in Turkey to have our people in Syria resisting the Turks in whatever it is they want to do there. That's a terrible quandary. Mm. That is about the worst
right.
bogged down condition because all the initiative of what to do in that region falls out of our hands and in the hands of other people. And for that reason alone, I think it was very, very important to find a way to extract the United States from that compromised position and get back to something where we could come back in from a different perspective. I understand completely that it means we are, again, one of the world's most unreliable allies. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we got boxed. And the only thing you can do when you get boxed is extract.
Interesting. By the way, President Trump has extended an invitation, as I just recalled, to Erdogan to come to Washington. He has accepted and will be here in D.C. next month, I understand. And I believe, again, that is all very strategic in nature as to why that's happening. Let me bring in and get to opening the conversation as well. Colonel Jim Warshak, please. And Colonel Warshak is retired from United States Air Force. He's a career senior intelligence and special missions officer. A former deputy director of intelligence at U.S. Central Command, served on the White House National Security Council staff as intelligence aide to the National Security Advisor. Colonel Warshak, his article on the platform, again, is, let me give you the title to that, U.S. Military, the Kurds, and Syria, the withdrawal. Here's the reality. And the reality, you say, Jim, is this. a few hundred actual U.S. combat troops are not going to have a significant impact on defending the Kurds, period. Nor has our return on equity ever addressed that either, certainly not with respect as an option to remain or withdraw from the region. And you get on to talk about Turkey being a NATO member and so on and so forth, which we know, which puts us in a really strange position, as Dennis was just saying. But Turkey's been going down a pretty bad road for some time now. And the madman who runs that is somebody we have to keep close by, which is why the president obviously has extended the invite and why he's talking to him. But he's one you can't take your eye off too long here. Colonel Washuk, what do you think and what you've heard thus far? Let's keep it to the Kurds initially and your thoughts about what we're doing as an ally to them, sir.
Well, all good points. First off, we are not abandoning the Kurds. Just because we don't have fighters standing alongside them doesn't mean we're abandoning them. We are providing them, training them, equipping them with the best equipment in the world. That's not going to stop. That's going to continue. We are going to provide training. We're going to do everything we've done to them. We're just not going to have troops necessarily co-located on the ground with them. The second point is, I went in to northern Iraq back in late 2002, 2003, just before we invaded Iraq, and we developed a relationship with the Kurds because we needed them for intel, and they are very reliable, and likewise, they saw us reliable. But we really depended on them more than they depended on us. They were very capable, well-trained, and know what they have to do. They're defending their region that expanses Syria and Iraq and Turkey and Armenia and Iran. It's the Kurdish region. They're always in a defensive posture no matter what. They've been doing this forever. We entered the fray after 9/11 going into Iraq to topple Saddam, and he was a common enemy to them, and they supported us. But the small teams that we have in Syria right now, they are actually protecting our guys on the ground. And when you look at the actual area, the buffer zone, the security zone along the Turkey Syrian border, it's about 20 miles wide. I think we had about 56 troops in there, and they've since been pulled out. It goes exactly along with what Dennis said, you know, where we have both Americans and in Turkey and in Syria, and it puts us into a somewhat of a quagmire. Now, this whole issue was discussed last year when President Trump first talked about extracting our folks from Syria. They're moving over in the border into Turkey. They're on call to help the Kurds anytime. We have 5,000 troops in Iraq, in Baghdad or around Baghdad, who are also on call to help should any elements of ISIS or a situation arise where we need to go in. And certainly that's the case, and that's the point I'm making here, is we're not abandoning them. We're changing the dynamics here, and that's about it. The worst thing we can do is get into what we constantly do and have done, and this is why we have these long wars, is mission creep. The mission gets done and we take on something else, whether it's nation building, whether it's peacekeeping, whether it's police actions. And that's what the president is trying to stop.
Yeah, he sure is. No, he sure is, Jim. And that's, I think he's put out there really well to remind what our position is and what the position of the military should be. All right. So what we're doing here, friends, today on the Voice of the Nation is really peeling this discussion. There's a lot to talk about here. And again, the question you want to ask yourself is a big one. Can America get out of endless wars? Now, what's interesting about this to me, and I don't want it to be lost on you, is the timing of this, where this has come out, that President Trump has put this out there. Now, the president is, I like him, love him, leave him, hate him, he's a brilliant strategist, if anything else. So while Washington is circling the wagons and the very far extremes of parties are trying to impeach a president from the Oval Office, a very unusual point in itself in this country, While that's happening, the president brilliantly puts this out there. I question the timing of it, but actually you needed another headline in there to change some of the narrative as this impeachment talk is happening. And I would say that that may be part of the reason. There are other reasons as well, clearly. But I think that's fascinating as well. But the one thing about this, people, is bipartisan outrage is the one thing you're seeing right now. And that doesn't happen a lot here because we're so divided, typically by ideology and party politics here. But let me read you this here as we pause here a moment. Pat Robertson, he comes out, a big ally of the president and has been in the certainly the Oval Office many times and chatting. And he says Trump is in danger of losing the mandate of heaven over the Syria decision, he says. And this is the I'm speaking about Pat Robertson, the televangelist, of course. He noted that he was appalled by President Trump's decision, he said, to draw back the troops in northern Syria. And this is really where the clash happens here. Another interesting point I want to bring to you here is, listen to this here now. This is a very interesting quote, which I picked up from Colonel Douglas McGregor. And it goes like this, and I quote, "Well, the swamp is clearly very disturbed because the president has done something that I've not witnessed in the last 30 years. He's actually injecting strategy back into American foreign and defense policy." We'll see you on the other side of the pause.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, we are joined back here by Ilana Friedman, Adele Wilbur, Dennis Santiago, Colonel Jim Warshaw. We're talking again, can America get out of endless wars? And as I was telling you just before the pause there, Colonel Warshaw, I want to stay with you a moment as we pick back up here. And now you hear what I mentioned about the timing of this. And I mentioned that quote from Colonel Douglas McGregor, which I thought was quite fascinating when he referenced the swamp and the deep state being very disturbed. And of course, the military-industrial complex is having a shit fit today, obviously, as well. Talk to me about that point. And you know where I'm going with this. And back to actually what Dennis had referenced, the change in foreign policy, because this really is a change in foreign policy for the country, isn't it?
It's a change in foreign policy from exactly what Colonel McGregor stated. And I want to make a point. I know him. Him and I served together at times during my military career, and this is what I talk about all the time. You know, we go all the way back to when Trump first became president. The effects that Trump has had. This is a critical point that was made. Trump is injecting strategy and strategic focus back into our foreign policy. We're getting out of the emotional side of things, and we're dealing with the realities as they are. The other thing that Trump is playing here, you know, I always talk about he's always playing a five-level multiple chess game, and he's doing this here. There are other players and actors involved in Syria, the Russians, the Iranians, you know, of course, the Turks that we're talking about, and the Kurds, and he's putting blocking mechanisms, Trump is, to each of these players and basically turning to them and saying, okay, what are you going to do now? And he's done that very well, and he's forcing their hand. And I can guarantee he, in his discussions, you know, he had a phone call with the Turkish president over the weekend, likely laid out certain conditions and things that we're going to follow. And he invited him to Washington, and I agree, that's a good thing. One of the things that Trump does is he calls the bluffs of all our adversaries, not He doesn't just talk to our allies and ignore the rest. He'll sit down and talk to anybody because he wants, and he says this.
Which drives the other side crazy, Jim. That drives the other side crazy.
Yes, it does.
He falls into the old Sun Tzu. That's a Sun Tzu strategy. Know your enemy well and sit down and look your enemy in the eye.
Exactly, and that's what he's doing. And he will know how he can deal with each of these players and actors in the world and then develop our strategy from there. So that's really what we're seeing playing out here. And he is changing foreign policy from a relationship way of doing things that goes all the way back to the post-World War II period to more of a reality. This is the situation in the world. This is the situation on the ground. We have to deal with the realities, not deal with the ideals of what we think it should look like.
Right.
What we think it should look like will come out of how we deal with the realities. You know, that's what the left does. That's what Obama did. His ideology when it came to foreign policy was, well, we can do this because this is the way it ought to be. Well, it may look that way on paper in your eyes, but it doesn't look that way on paper in the eyes of the other actors who are out there.
That's a good point.
And Trump is trying to deal with it from that standpoint.
Yeah. Well, sometimes the cards are dealt the way you don't really like the hands you have, but you have to play the hand, you see, just like any good poker game. Actually, Jim, I want to, in one moment, I want to talk more about the Kurds in one second. I want to say something, a point that you bring up there. The fact that you're seeing a lot of people on the far left say right now, oh, this president, he's sitting down with dictators. He's friends with dictators and he's friends with the, I mean, people, come on. I mean, that is a brilliant, brilliant strategy. And only the strong can do that. So get the wax out of your ears and listen up to this point, because it's actually one of the most brilliant points that make President Trump a very unique man for very unique times, because it takes a bit personality, let's just keep it there, to do what he's doing. And of course, you're going to be called out from the military industrial complex, and you're going to be called out from the far left extremist lunatics, clearly, people. And that's what's happened clearly with all of this. I say that exactly the way it's intended. Ilana, I want to just stay on the Kurds one moment, because you've opened up a pretty big can about your concern with the Kurds. Jim says, listen, we're not abandoning the Kurds. And he puts that out there very, very vibrantly in his message, in his article there on the platform. You're concerned that we are abandoning the Kurds, and we've heard other comments here, and I think everybody would, it's a very arguable point. What is your biggest concern? I'd like you to throw me a question that we can ask Jim from you as to, in relation to the Kurds specifically and what we're doing here. What have you heard from Jim that makes sense? And what's your biggest question to Jim about the Kurds?
A lot of what Jim says makes sense. And I think everybody who is on this panel today has a great deal of knowledge about the situation and an understanding. What I'm concerned about most is, first of all, how this is being absorbed by the Kurds themselves. And they're speaking out and they're angry and they feel like they're being abandoned. So that's the first thing. That's a perception that comes from inside the issue. They say that if the Turks invade, they will wage an all-out war with everything they've got. So this I see as a major problem to mess up what looks like it's going to be an orderly retreat by the U.S. And the second point is that this orderly retreat, how is this going to be observed by other countries that we have to deal with in the Middle East? My point is that when you're dealing in the Middle East, you have to deal from a position of power. And the way it will look, I'm afraid, to countries like Iran, for example, is that America is running with its tail between its legs.
We're on retreat mode, you're saying at that point, yeah. I mentioned earlier about the allies and the point of reference of the interpretation of how this looks to others. And I heard other reports, Jim, that said that the Kurds were okay with this. And it's completely different than what Ilana's saying there. Of course, you're getting all kinds of reports on this, but what do you think?
Well, the Kurds understand what's at play here. They understand the relationship between the U.S. and Turkey, because we are both allies, and because we're both allies under, you know, through NATO, we are first and foremost sworn to protect and defend each other. You know, Article 5 under NATO is if either is attacked, we'll go to their defense. Certainly, in the case of the Kurds, if the Kurds were attacked by an element of ISIS or another radical Islamist group, we would certainly defend them. The problem, and this goes to what Dennis talked about, is we're in a precarious situation between two allies. Who do we choose to defend in that situation? This is a greater discussion that needs to go on. Yeah. You know, what I find absent here, and it's unfortunate, you know, there used to be a time, and it wasn't too long ago, where we would have a situation like this, where the UN would step in, and we would have the UN peacekeeping force. And
God,
the
don't
UN
even
and,
think that way, Jim.
Well, I'm saying it. This is the horrific bad thing that happened with the UN going as far left as it has. It's lost its way, but we've always used the UN as, you know, regardless of how good they were in every single conflict to deal with this type of situation. This would be an ideal situation if the UN had its act together and played a responsible role in the world that it's supposed to, rather than...
Well, Jim, they're busy right now in the Arctic chasing global warming.
Exactly. And that's my point. If they took on the responsibility they were given back in 1948 when they were created, they're not doing that anymore. This would be an ideal situation to deal with that. And discussions could go on in the various types of organizations that would be stood up of how do we end the war in Syria? How do we deal with the Kurd situation? I mean, I look at it as there should be, you know, five or six countries that encompass the Kurdish, what we call Kurdistan, the region, to sit down and say, okay, how do we work with the Kurds? They are an autonomous group in each of your countries. You know, offer them human rights, let them live just like any other ethnic population within borders live. And, you know, that's another discussion for a whole nother time, but it needs to be done. But it shouldn't be the U.S. that has to put in and play a role of, okay, we're going to police this up. We're going to stand in between.
Which is what Trump is saying.
Which is what Trump is saying. Yeah, exactly. And the Kurds understand that. We never entered into an agreement with the Kurds that we would be their, you know, perpetual protectors. And I go back to saying we were never their protectors. We supplied millions and millions of dollars in arms and training to them. They actually protected us because they're greater in numbers.
I was
going to
say a moment ago that a lot of people would argue the Kurds can take care of themselves. What would you say to that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. They have for all these centuries.
Right. And you know, what's interesting too, I don't want it to be lost on folks. It's funny when we talk about the Kurds, my heart always goes out to knowing people who know this group of people and their passion. And even the women out there are just tremendous fighters. And what's amazing about it is that they populate many different countries. They're a group of people without a country. Again, it's one of those situations, as you just said, Jim, you know, they're sort of a group, right? I mean, they're without a country, and they're in all these various countries. And when you say Kurdistan, I mean, they would love to have that in a real legitimate way, you know? I mean,
One other thing is we have a lot of allies around the world that we supply equipment, arms, training, what have you, but we don't go into battle with them.
Dennis, here's a tweet that President Trump put out here. Listen to this. And this is an interesting twist to this, which I want to dive into a minute here as to why you say, well, how does President Trump look at these things? He looks at them different than other leaders have. And he says this: as I have stated strongly before, and just to reiterate, if Turkey does anything that I, in my great and unmatched wisdom, now you've got to say that when you think about a leader, Dennis, and you're patting your back and calling yourself great and unmatched wisdom, that is quite something. But that is very Trumpian, isn't it now? Trumpism there for sure. So I love that tweet. You got, if Turkey does anything that I, in my, it's like the Oz, you know, in the Wizard of, in my great and unmatched wisdom, consider to be off limits, I will totally destroy and obliterate you. The economy of Turkey. I've done that. I've done it before, he says. And the tweet, they must, with Europe and others, watch over the captured ISIS fighters and families. And listen to this. Here's the point, Dennis. The U.S. has done far more than anyone could have ever expected, including the capture of 100% of the ISIS caliphate. It is time now for others in the region, some of great wealth, here it gets into the economy, to protect their own territory. The USA is great. Here's the big question, I think, that I wonder all the time. What makes this man so different in place to, again, asymmetric warfare? When you look at these kinds of things, Dennis, is that he doesn't look at this through the same binoculars that other presidents or leaders have. He comes at this from a CEO's desk and from a business application often. And really, is the president applying business economic decisions to political and security issues is the question. How would you answer that, Dennis?
I would say very much yes. I mean, you know, that tweet, that's the Donald, okay? And look, I've been watching the Donald make these kinds of statements since the early 1990s, back in the days of Kuwait and Saudi Arabia and Iraq, okay? Gulf One. He was speaking about this stuff even then in very much the same way. So the fact of the matter is this guy has studied that part of the world for a very, very long time. He comes at this not like a lot of people that just kind of bounce off the walls. This guy's been thinking about this for a while. And here's what he's figured out, that at a certain point, in order to get this thing to move forward, what you need to do, like a good CEO, is create buy-in of all of the claimants to the process. Mm-hmm. And what he's doing with it and has been doing for some time now is preparing the stage to hand things over to make these people take up their responsibilities. He's been adamant about that. The most important part of one of his tweets the other day was, I have avoided this fight for 3 years, but now it's time to do it. He's been thinking about this since the day he came.
Why do you think it's time now, Dennis? Speak to that point. With impeachment going on and them circling the wagons on that, was that the time? And why was the time and now?
No, that has nothing to do with it. The fact of the matter is the timing here is that the Turks want to move. Okay, they've been telegraphing that they want to move on their agenda for a very long time now. And if you listen to the Kurds, I mean, you know, I saw an article the other day, Fox News had one yesterday, actually, that the Kurds in that strip of Syria are worried that they're going to get squeezed out of existence by the Turks coming in from the north. Sure. And Assad coming in from the south. Sure. That their area is going to be flooded by refugees coming in. Mm-hmm. So, to the point that they're going to lose their culture in that part of the world, and they're going to have to shift all of their population, their culture, to some other part of this multinational region of this hypothetical Kurdistan. Trump knows all this stuff is going to happen. He knows there's no way to stop it. And he is getting to the point that he's saying, look, if we are going to be strategic, to Jim's point about the guy is a technical strategist, that it's time to start acting out and working through that technical strategy as the United States of America, as a leader of the world, because there isn't right now anybody else that's thinking along those lines. And we're it.
Well, political leaders, Dennis, and certainly the industrial military complex, none of them are happy with any of this. But think about this over the years.
Oh, of course not.
The American people have been, we've been trying to get loud when it comes to our blood and our treasure. This president did run on a lot of this, but Americans see and they get tired of a lot of this. When you speak about Afghanistan, you speak about Iran and Iraq and Syria and the entire Middle East structure. And you see our troops and how they're stretched all over the world. And I think that's been an outcry. So when a president that looks at this from a different, set of binoculars, he comes up with a different answer. And a lot of people don't like it in the establishment, obviously, back to Colonel McGregor's quote there a minute ago, Dennis, that I said to you a little while ago there, the swamp is very disturbed, which I love his quote there, you know, very disturbed because the president does something that I've not witnessed in the last 30 years. Love that quote, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, you know, like Trump read the tea leaves on this, right? You know,
right.
That part of the Middle East is about to start a 20 million body resettlement program. If we're there when that happens, we're in there for another 3 to 5 years, and he knows it. And everybody in the United States should know that too. It's either find a way to not be part of that process and make other people deal with it, or we're in there.
You bring up a really big point there. So you're saying, you're coming back to the point, the Middle East is at a tipping point, you're saying, Dennis?
Yes, I am.
Interesting. I don't hear anybody talking about that right now. That's fascinating. That's a whole nother conversation we got to have, because I think there's a lot of truth to that, especially when you see Iran and what they're doing and reaching out and a lot of the crazy stuff they're doing here. Well, again, here, let me do this here. There's a lot of interesting pieces to this, people. I want to and another thing, by the way, there's a report I want to share with you, too. The Associated Press came out here just today here, says Turkey says it won't bow to U.S. threat over its Syria plans. Back to the point I was just sharing with Dennis about the fact that the economic decisions and business decisions, and the fact that that the president came out and warned them that he'll destroy their economy. So, which again, the president, he uses the wallet to squeeze people. That's what they've done with Iran, clearly. It's a different kind of strategy, people. It's a different sort of animal, really. But let's take that up next in just a moment here.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good taste in gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. All right, we are back, joined here with Ilana Friedman, Del Wilbur, Dennis Santiago, Colonel Jim Warshak. We're all here and talking about this. A lot of interesting points being brought up. I wanted to try to do a 360 quick on this. Not easy to do, people, inside of an hour with these brilliant minds that are on the call here with us here today here. But I mentioned here the AP reporting about Turkey saying it won't bow to U.S. threats over its Syria plans here. And Del, I'd like to throw this at you, bring you in on this here. Let me read this to you. The Turkish vice president, by the way, is the one who obviously spoke for Erdogan in this, and said that their response was that, they're going to do what they need to do. And as far as the scope of its planned military incursion into northeastern Syria, it's their business. And that's kind of what they fired back with, even though the president has tried to be, you know, in communication with Erdogan and what's happening. It's a very odd relationship, very clearly here. What are the dangers of this right now with Turkey? I mean, Turkey has been faltering for some time since the attempted coup on Erdogan and what he's cracked down in Turkey. He's changed the political landscape in Turkey. It's become very, very volatile and really not a dependable ally at all. In fact, now you see with them purchasing military equipment from Russia, that's become a real hot spot. What do you think, Del, happens with this in regards to Turkey coming back and saying they're not going to listen anyway, so they'll do what they want? Are we setting this up for failure with Turkey, or will it work?
Well, I think Turkey's going to do exactly what they said. They're going to do what they want. they're not for most of its history, you know, Turkey was a secular country. And since Erdogan took control in that, you know, Erdogan is no friend of the United States. I mean, he is a hardcore Islamist. He's a supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood. In my opinion, he's actually more aligned with ISIS than he is with the U.S. Ideologically, anyway. He's a strange individual, and so I don't think he really, nor his senior level advisors in it, really care too much about any threats coming from President Trump. They're they're going to do pretty much what they want and let the chips fall, you know, fall where they may.
Ilana, are you suspect at all on the timing of any of this? I mentioned a couple of times, and I said, no, Dennis said no, but, you know, the president has been brilliant in being able to open the door and throw a stink bomb in just to get a rise out of people. And, you know, with the media circus going on and the whole impeachment trial, I think it's quite interesting the timing of any of this. Is there anything to that or not really?
Brilliant at this. So I don't think that this was totally out of the picture. What's going on locally, what's going on with this crazy, insane impeachment process that doesn't just seem, they just don't seem to want to let go. But I think that there is another and a different perspective that he brings to the table when he's looking at the Middle East. And this is a good thing. He's able to compartmentalize. And so when he looks at the Middle East, he looks through a different set of glasses, if you will, that that gives him the ability to see things from a different perspective than just from the perspective that he's under attack by some.
So even though you disagree with the decision and the Kurds and all, you'll still respect the fact that he's very strategic in nature and what he's doing, Ilana, you're saying?
Yes. The thing that concerns me very much that seems to be being ignored is that since they were so successful, the Kurds and America as partners, right, in driving ISIS out of northern Syria, right, the fact that they are gone is maybe a very temporary situation. And we need to address also the fact that ISIS is very active in other parts of the Middle East. They don't have such a high profile anymore, but they are still very, very active throughout the Middle East.
Yeah.
And if they see a vacuum, they will go into it.
Ilana, I want to tell you something about a vacuum. Before I go over to Colonel Hay and get you to opine, let me say something, Ilana, to you about this vacuum here. You know, we do a lot of strategic policy and posturing here because of the Middle East. I mean, we are really their bitch child here is what I would say when it comes to the Middle East. And I remember 20, 30 years ago as a young lad that people were saying we ought to just let them knock each other out over there and stay the hell out of it. I remember saying that 30 years ago. People were fed up with the Middle East, and this has been going on for thousands and thousands of years. But let me say something to you about this vacuum. I find a lot of people always should talk because of back to that multi-level chess and when you look at the Middle East as a whole. But, you know, quite frankly, it's the same reason why we're arguing to stay in Afghanistan. We're worried about a vacuum. We're worried about a vacuum in Iran and Iraq. But, you know, quite frankly, I think one of the next hot spots that nobody's really talking about, you want to talk about a vacuum, I'll give you a whole series of vacuums. How about Africa? I think Africa is going to be, you talk about a vacuum, I think Africa is going to be, in the near coming future, is going to be the next trouble spot, because I think a lot of people are populating Africa right now because nobody's really paying attention. And I think a lot of these strong men and opposition, I think, is going to come from Africa. And a lot of the Islamic terrorism, back to the fight of good and evil, could come from there as well. But, you know, Colonel, I think this whole thing about fighting vacuums is very difficult when you've got a big planet here and we're dealing with a lot of evil. I mean, there's a lot of vacuums, buddy, and I ain't selling vacuums anymore, but come on, talk to me.
Yes, you're right. There are a lot of vacuums, and we've experienced them throughout history. Funny you mentioned Africa. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, when the colonial powers of Europe were pulling out of those countries, that left a vacuum, and we watched a wave of civil wars go across Africa from the Mediterranean down to the South Atlantic part of the country, of the continent. The vacuum we leave is going to be there regardless. And I can tell you, Afghanistan will always be a vacuum no matter who pulls out of there. That's been it's been a basket case, if you will, with regard to that for hundreds and hundreds of years. The real problem we have to deal with, and I talked about this going back 5+ years, 2012, 13, 14, when we first started to deal with this, is the real problem we're dealing with is radical Islam. It's the ideology. It's an ideology just like communism, just like what we saw in Germany in World War II, Nazism. It's a radical ideology that is hell-bent on taking over the world. It's what's driving any type of radical Islamic group, whether it's ISIS or Al-Qaeda or Al-Shabaab or any of the groups around the world. That's what's driving it. And that's what we have to destroy. And you know, many have talked about how do we change that. I think what this president is doing is he's sitting down, and this has to be first attacked from within Islam. It's got, you know, we've talked about there's got to be a reformation or something going on to stop the hardline radicalism that's embedded in the religion itself. To me, it's almost an impossibility. But what Trump is doing is he's sitting down with the leaders of these countries that are affected by radical Islam. And, you know, you can go back, and Turkey is a pivotal country because it's a NATO nation, and it used to be secular, and now it's becoming more Islamic religious based. And so if you can get the leadership in these countries to understand what they're dealing with on a level playing field, that's what Trump is doing. And that's why I'm encouraged by him sitting down with the Turkish president in the next month or so, whenever that happens, as he did when he first took office. And the first thing he did was go to the Middle East. He met with 50 plus Islamic leaders from around the Islamic world and talked to them about this. I think it's having an impact. Granted, the greatest pushback we're seeing now is, you know, what we're seeing with Iran and the radical Shia out of Iran. You know, they're doing what they're doing in Yemen, and they're continuing to support Hezbollah in Syria and Lebanon. So the discussions that are being played out, and he's playing strategic positioning with each of these countries, but he hasn't attacked any of them. He hasn't taken military action other than to finish wiping out ISIS, which was a campaign promise. And for the most part, that's happened. I understand we have to ensure that that they don't come back, that we don't provide the opportunity for that to happen. I think that will still be in play, but you don't have to do it with boots on the ground. You have to be prepared and you know, have good intelligence to let you know when that's going to, where that's happening and what's going on, and be on the right footing. Well, we're on the right footing because he's had record defense budgets to keep our military and give us every capability we have to defend and deter what we're doing. He's just not electing or choosing. We're going to get involved in every single potential conflict in the world that there is.
You know, one of the things I'm going to talk to you about, too, in the next few days, and I want to leave this thought with you, friends, is this here. You know, the president recently has come out, and I've seen mentions where he's concerned with his legacy. He's concerned with the fact that this impeachment will be a scar on his legacy as he's making these important decisions. You know, I'm going to tell you something else right at this point. When you look at this whole game of chess that we've been talking to you about, I want to suggest the president do this. Mr. President, look at this impeachment scar that they put on your record as a badge of honor. I would encourage the president to look at this as a badge of honor, that he would be in very select company, but more so at the very top of that class, with the fact that there will be a big asterisk next to this as to why the deep state was trying to remove him from office. And so, friends, I would call that a badge of honor. And I would say to the president, that's how I would look at this impeachment thing. And I would say, you know what? Too bad. Just turn the channel and keep on going here, people, as Washington continues to obliterate themselves here. Anyways, thank you very much here on the call here again. Ilana Friedman, Del Wilbur, Dennis Santiago, Colonel Jim Warshak. All of the write-ins, articles, messages, thoughts are back on the platform, people, AmericaOutLoud.com. We continue on, and again, we're all in this to win here. But it is time. It's time for all of us to get involved and get loud.